I was about to say this worked earlier when we tried it out. What did you just do to me? And slideshow. I don't want that up. Something just happened, and I'm trying to figure out how to fix it. Oh, okay, it works that way. I've just never seen something happen this way on the computer before, which helps me, actually, because it'll tell me what's coming. So good afternoon, everybody. And good afternoon to those who are online, watching on the Internet. The Internet's a fascinating thing. When it works well, I guess we can give Al Gore credit for it. But when it messes up, it's his fault because he invented it. At least that's what he said back in 2000. So, and I mean, working with the computers and the various things, it's just fascinating. So, a few weeks ago, the James Webb Telescope went up and started sending back pictures. And when I saw the first handful of pictures, it just totally fascinated me. I'm a space nut anyway. Some people think I'm a space cadet. But I have always loved space, and I think a lot of that is because when I was a kid, I don't remember Mercury. I remember the last part of Gemini, and I remember Apollo. And I remember the moon landing. I wasn't quite 10 years old then. And just watching how Kennedy set something out and said, we are going to walk on the moon by the end of this decade. And we did. It pulled the whole nation together in a unique way. Oh, there were still the problems. You had the hippies, you had Vietnam, various things like that. Before the times when there were shot, the Apollo, especially when Apollo was going up, those things were put on the back burner because the nation and even the world was fascinated with what was going on. When these pictures came out from the Webb telescope, I said right then, okay, I've got to do a sermon on this. You know, so it's one of those things where something very much in society helps you realize, okay, I want to speak on this. This is something that I really enjoy talking about. This is a picture that was taken from Webb, and there are literally 14 galaxies all in that immediate vicinity there. And that's just a little area of space. There are millions of galaxies, maybe billions or trillions of galaxies, because we haven't seen everything yet. But the creation is phenomenal. So often when we have sermons, it seems like we talk about the large side, and I'm going to spend some time in space, believe me. Probably about a third to half the sermon will be outer space. But a good part of the first part of this is going to be micro. Down to the atoms, down to the molecules, down to the subatomic particles that make up the atoms. And when you think about that, an atom's so small that we can't see it, and it's almost impossible to get a picture of an atom because it's so small, even with electron microscopes and specialty microscopes, it's still extremely difficult to get a picture of an atom. And so we're going to look at the creation today from the smallest to the largest. From the particles that make up this hydrogen atom. And this apparently was the first picture ever taken of an atom. That it shows the electron orbit. I don't have to do it that way. Here. That's the orbit that the electron is taking around the hydrogen atom. And then here's the proton and the neutron. They used a quantum microscope capable, that's capable of seeing into quantum realm. So you're getting into 10, like to the negative ninth, 10 to the negative 10th inches or millimeters. Something so small, there's no way that we could even have a chance of seeing it. This next picture is another one of the hydrogen atom, but what it does is it focuses more on the electron. And you can see that the electron is moving around that atom. And you can see where you have actually what's a little bit of a heat buildup there. And that's why you're getting the red and the orange and the yellow there, is because that's the route that the electrons traveled. And even with something that small, you get a little bit of an energy buildup that ends up being put with the electron. And you can see this is four different pictures of that electron. Now, what we understand with atoms, we put into something that's called a periodic table. This periodic table, I'm going to explain a few things, because probably for a lot of you, you haven't seen a periodic table in 50 years or 40 years or however X amount of time. Hydrogen is right here. It's element number one. It has one proton, one neutron, and one electron. Over here is helium. And that's what's known as one of the noble gases. These six elements here are what are known as noble gases, because they don't combine with any other element. You have helium, neon, argon, krypton, xenon, and radon. And those six elements do not literally combine with anything else. Anything that's in the purplish, lavender, chartreuseous, whatever color, is a gas in its normal state. The two that are blue, mercury and bromine, are liquids at normal temperature. Everything that's white is a solid at normal temperature. And everything that's yellow are elements that have been made by man by bombarding an element with another element. Like they took uranium-238 and started bombarding it, and it made neptunium, which is element 93. Now what happens is these are periods, are also called valence shells. So you have shell 1 has 2 electrons. Shell 2 has 8 electrons, which would be the up to 8 electrons. It can have anywhere from 1 to 8, so lithium has 1 electron in its second shell. Then the third shell has 8 electrons. And what happens is you take, and I'll take an element that's very familiar to you, sodium, which is element 11, and chlorine, which is element 17. They're both on that third shell. You combine them. When they combine, the electrons are shared, and you get sodium chloride, which is salt. Water is a similar thing. Oxygen is here. It has 6 electrons in the second shell. Hydrogen has 1 electron in its first shell. But when they combine, it combines into oxygen's second shell, and it makes the hydrogen have two electrons for the first shell. The oxygen now has 8, and it makes it stable, and that's how you get water. And that's how your elements are formed, and they be, especially your stable elements. You don't see the cursor? Oh, well, I was hoping that would work, but thank you for letting me know that. I was sitting here saying, running around all over the place with the cursor and thinking it was showing up there. So this is the periodic table. This is all of the elements that have ever existed. And there's 7 levels of shells. I don't think we're going to get past element 118, because that would require starting a new shell. And God only created into the 7th shell. So now, I took an example with this. This is a neon atom, where it has the 2 shells. You see where it says K shell and it's shown in blue? That is the first shell where it has 2 electrons going around it. Then the L shell has 8 electrons going around it. And so what happens is there's your 10 electrons that helped to make up the neon. And then you, next to that, have the nucleus, which is protons and the neutrons. And it makes, all of that put together makes neon. 10 protons, 10 neutrons, and 10 electrons. Now, I'm not going to get into the science of a positive and negative ion and all of that. That's for people who are taking chemistry. Taking this down a step farther, you have what are called the elementary particles, of which there are several groups. The first ones in the purple are called quarks. They have some interesting names. You have an up quark, a down quark, a charm quark, a strange quark. I mean, that one I always found kind of odd. Why would you call anything strange? And then you have a top and bottom quark. Then you have your leptons, which an electron is a part of that. And then you have your muons and taus and then neutrinos. And then you get into, and I'm having a hard time seeing that one, gauge bosons. And so they are a part of the system also, the bosons. And then you have the Higgs boson, which was discovered maybe 10 years ago. And you have the God particle, which I didn't get on this one, but it's only been around for a few years. So those are the particles that make up the protons, neutrons, and electrons that make up an atom. So you think about it, we thought for years that the atom, the proton, neutron, and electron were the smallest things. No, these are a lot smaller than that. And I would not be surprised if in 100 years, 200 years, we come back to this and we find particles that are 10, 20, 50, 100 times smaller than these. So God's creation goes from something that is extremely small to humongous, universal. Luke 12, verse 7. We see God is concerned with the little things as well as the big things. In Luke 12, verse 7, it says, "But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows." This is where he was talking about how he knew a sparrow when it dropped to the ground. And we are valued much more than that sparrow, so he knows us. To me, I think about that. And does he know every quark? Does he know every electron? Does he know every God particle? Just like he knows the hairs of our heads. Now, some of us have more hair than others. I run a running joke that bald is beautiful. Some people probably don't agree with that, but I enjoy that personally. Now, this is a molecule, and here's where I definitely wish I had the pointer. My suspicion, and I'm not 100% sure, this is 3 hydrogen atoms, because you can see where there's like a bright spot, and then there's just a little line there, and that's where the hydrogen atom is interacting with the carbon, or it might be an oxygen atom. I'm not real sure at this point, but it's interacting with the oxygen atom. But the 3 atoms are the larger atoms, and then you see the 4 smaller spots there. Those, I think, are the hydrogen atoms in this molecule, because I only see one line generally coming from them. And that's a close-up of a water molecule and actually having almost like an electrical storm in it. So there's a lot that's going on in the micro side that is just phenomenal. And God is every bit as concerned with the micro as he is the macro. Now this is a picture of a DNA molecule. You have the strands, and all these various strands mean different things. You take these DNA molecules, and when we get a few slides farther down, you will see what starts coming as a result of these DNA molecules. But you have the strands that run around the outside, and then you have the connectors, and that's what makes you you and what makes me me. If you had a different sperm cell go into that egg other than the specific one that did, you wouldn't be here. It'd be a different person in your place. I wouldn't be here. You think about it from that perspective, it leads us to thinking about that with a scripture that's coming up, that God knew us from before we were conceived. Romans chapter 8. In Romans 8, in verse 14, says, "For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are sons of God. But you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption." Better translated, sonship, from the Greek word huiothesia, H-U-I-O-T-H-E-S-I-A, which more properly is sonship or placing of a son. But by the spirit of adoption, to keep the translation clean, by whom we cry out, Abba, Father. So we see that we're led by God's Spirit. When we're baptized, we are led by God's Spirit in us. Verse 16. This is a picture, as we go into this verse, of a sperm literally entering an egg. This is just in the process of conception, because the sperm's not all the way in yet and had the chance to unite with the nucleus. But this is extremely close to that instant of conception. Verse 16, the Spirit himself, or it should be itself really, because the Spirit is not male, bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. Now, that sperm can represent God's Spirit, and our spirit represent that egg. And that spirit combines, unites with our spirit to make us, in verse 17, and if children, so it makes us a child of God, then heirs. We are also heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. Christ was the firstborn. We are heirs with Christ. Now, Christ being the firstborn has special privilege, which is why they said the firstborn male always received a double portion of an inheritance. But heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. We look forward to that time where we are literally spirit beings and a child of God. We are children now. You know, stop and think about it for a minute. You know, I see Mike here and Corinne. I see them. Do you consider that child in your belly, or what is in your belly, your child? So from conception, you feel, and I think everybody feels that, felt that. What was in there in that pregnancy was their child. So it makes sense that we are children of God once we are conceived into that family. Jeremiah chapter 1. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, which is why I almost literally think that God knew what egg and what sperm we're going to get together to make the child. Because if a different sperm had met with that egg, that would have had a, you would have had a different person, right? So Jeremiah 1, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I sanctified you, I ordained you a prophet to the nations. Now he's talking very specifically to Jeremiah. But you think, I think you can say that with everybody. That God knows you before you were conceived. And we see in the picture, we see the various stages of human development. And at 23, the number 23 slide, that's 5 millimeters, it says. 5 millimeters is about that long. Matter of fact, no, that's wrong. It's 5 centimeters is that long. 5 millimeters is about that long. So, I mean, you're looking at a child that is a fifth of an inch long at about 60 days. But you look at this and it's fascinating because you can see the first 2 to 3 weeks, it's essentially a dot. And then you get past that, then you start seeing a tailbone develop, what looks like a tail, and that's where the tailbone is. And then you start seeing around slide 14, 15, you start seeing the legs and the arms starting to appear. And by the time you get to about slide 19, number 19 on there, you can tell that that's going to be a baby. You can tell that's going to be a human baby by then. Starting to have fingers and toes, and you can see the eye. Starting of the nose, you can tell that that is going to be a child. Romans chapter 8, verse 22. For we know the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs until now. Not only that, but we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption or sonship, the redemption of our body. We're waiting for that process. You look at this. This is 1 month increments. So 1 month through 9 months. 9 months, you see that head's down, right? It's ready to, that baby is ready to come out the birth canal and to be born as a breathing human being. Because that baby is a human being before that point in time. So we see this process. The process of birth. Conception and birth. Where you literally see a parallel with us. We're waiting for that change. We cry every day, "Your kingdom come." As we watch the society go down the tubes and make so many changes that it just is mind-numbing. And it's turning away from God more and more all the time, turning more and more to Satan. And Satan's loving every minute of it. But we look so forward for when we are born, when we are changed from this physical body into a spirit body, and we can start helping this entire world under Christ get straightened out. Now, we've looked at the micro. We've looked from subatomic particles through conception and the process of the child developing in the woman's body. And leading to the point of birth. At this point, we're going to start jumping to the other side. And I chose to start intentionally with just looking at the solar system. This is, I'm going to say it's probably the best example I saw of where you can get some semblance of a ratio of size. And in the base picture they have with this, this is all 1,000 times size. So imagine the sun being shrunk by 1,000 times. And all those little dots right close there. Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. And then Jupiter's out a little farther than Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and then Pluto at the outermost point of its orbit. Because Pluto's orbit actually crosses Neptune's orbit. There's very strong evidence that probably at some point in time something hit Pluto, which used to be a moon of Neptune, and knocked it out of orbit. Out of the orbit around Neptune, and then it went into its own orbit. So that's one reason I think they have the argument whether Pluto is a planet or not. But you have other what are considered subplanets outside or mini planets outside that are smaller. They found quite a few of them that orbit farther out than Pluto. But this gives a perspective as to a little bit of size. Even though the sun's really large in that, you'd have to shrink the sun down, I'd say, by at least half to get the relationship that you have the distance of the sun to Mercury. This is the Earth, our home. I chose this picture of Earth intentionally. There's a hurricane hitting Florida, it looks like. It could very possibly be a few years ago when the hurricane was hitting the Bahamas. And it got me thinking that there's some scriptures that talk about the earth in a way that really show and give a perspective. Job 38, starting in verse 4, it says, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." He's talking to Job. He's heard Job and his friends talk for 37 chapters. And now he's sitting there saying, okay, now we're just going to straighten everybody out. It's time for me to say what I need to say and get everybody on the right perspective. "But where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." Where were we? We weren't around. "Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it?" This is something that really gets into more of your civil and architectural engineering. And where stretching the line upon it would be like the surveying and making sure everything is square and everything's in the right place so that things will function the way they are supposed to. "To what were its foundations fastened?" Here's the earth floating out in the middle of space somewhere. Everything is floating out in the middle of space, in its place. "Or who laid its cornerstone?" Now we go back to the macro, or the micro, I should say. We're sitting here looking at those small subatomic particles that made atoms, that made molecules, that made bigger molecules, that all came together and started making matter. And making massive amounts of matter. I have no idea how many atoms are this planet consist of this planet, but it's got to be in the Googles and Googles and Googles, which a Google is one with 100 zeros after it. Okay? Just a little bit of perspective. That's a number nobody ever thinks about. "Who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb?" Nice reference back to pregnancy. But we see that God's the one who did all this. He's the one who made this planet in the way that it was made so that man could live on it. So that we could breathe, so we could have oxygen, so that we have something that we don't have 78% oxygen in the air, do we? We have 21% oxygen. If we had 78% oxygen, first time somebody lit a fire, boom. We'd have some problems. We'd all be cooked medium well pretty quickly. So God set this planet up in a way that man could live on it, put it in a comfort zone about 93 million miles from the sun. If it was in plus or minus 2 million miles, it would either be too cold or too hot. We're in what they call the Goldilocks zone for life. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, we see it talking a little bit more about the earth. One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. That's where the earth on its axis is rotating. And you can see just very minor variations right now of where the sun's rising from day to day. I can tell it from work because where I pull in to the into the property, you can just see that every morning the sun's moving very slowly south for the sunrise. But it's something essentially, unless you have some point of reference, you're in the exact same spot every day, you're not going to pick up. But the sun, we can count on it rising every day. We can count on it setting every evening. And God set that in motion. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north, and the wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuits. Hurricanes. You know, you have storms, low pressure systems. They rotate one direction. High pressure systems rotate the opposite direction. And what you have is then, when it gets windy, is when you have the pressures, the closer that the high and the low pressure are, the windier that it will be. If they're 1,000 miles apart, it's not very windy. If they're 200, 300 miles apart, it gets very windy very quickly. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full to the place from which the rivers come. Then they return again. So we see, here's the evaporation condensation process that's being talked about, where the rivers run into the sea. There's enough temperature with the sun beating on the seas and oceans where they cause evaporation. And that goes up, forms the clouds. The clouds may meet mountains and start raining there or snowing there according to the temperature. Then it gets into the rivers and the aquifers and flows back to the sea again. You have this cycle of life. This is a picture from the moon taken by Apollo 8, December 24th, 1968. At this point, I would like to take about 2 minutes and have you listen to what the three men that were up there, Bill Anders, Jim Lovell, and Frank Borman, said when they were circling the moon as the first people to have ever circled the moon on that day. Now, keep in mind what the date is that was said, because there is something said in here that I wish they hadn't said. I'll put it that way. Come on. Can you hear it?
Has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day. And the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. Let it divide the waters from the waters." And God made the firmament. And divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. And the evening and the morning were the second day. God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place. And let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth. And the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo God bless all of you on the good earth.
Could have used, not used, a little bit of those last few words, but I mean, seeing that they keep it, and I mean, it was the attitude behind it in my mind. I mean, they were so thankful that we live on this earth, and they're up at the moon, looking at astonishing desolation is the term that I believe that Buzz Aldrin used when he was walking on the moon. Which, speaking of walking on the moon, on July 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong from Wapakoneta was the first man to walk on the moon. And what I'll do is, for about a minute or a little bit more, give you the words he said when he walked on the moon.
There's a foot coming. There he is. There's a foot coming.
And Walter Cronkite, by the way.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming.
Okay, I just checked, getting back up to that first step. That hasn't collapsed too far, but it's adequate to get back up. Roger, we copy. Pretty good little jump.
So there's a foot on the moon, stepping down on the moon. If he's testing that first step, he must be stepping down on the moon at this point.
There's a pad that he steps on before he actually steps
Houston
on the moon.
F2, I'm at 1/160th second for shadow photography on the sequence camera. Okay. I'm at the foot of the ladder. The lamb footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Down there, it's very fine.
Boy, look at those pictures. Wow. It's a little shadowy, but he said he expected that in the shadow of the lunar module. Armstrong is on the moon. Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon on this July
20th, 1969. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One small step for man, but I didn't get the second phrase.
They had a hard time picking up what the sound was. I mean, you could tell the sound quality is not anywhere near what we're normally used to. But back in 1969, that was fantastic compared to what we would get a lot of times with our TVs. This point may have been the high point of humanity, where they literally left Earth and walked on the moon. There's a lot of people who think Neil Armstrong was the greatest man in the past 100 years because of that. But it took hundreds of thousands of other people doing phenomenal amount of work to cause that to happen. And that's just to the moon. Traveling to Venus would be millions upon millions upon millions of miles farther. We see the picture now of the Earth and the Moon. Let's go ahead and now look at the Sun and something unique with the Sun. This is a solar eclipse, and it's a progression where somebody took a picture every few minutes and just literally went through the progression of where it started to where it became total eclipse, and then came back to where the sun and the moon were totally separated again. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 35 says, "Thus says the Lord, who gives the sun for a light by day, the ordinance of the moon and the stars for a light by night, who disturbs the sea and the waves roar. The Lord of hosts is his name. We see that the sun and the moon are given a specific purpose. The moon is given to have light by night, the sun by day, and the stars. Because you can have a moonless night, and the stars that are light years away can still give off just enough light that you can see a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. But we see that God set all of this up for a purpose, for times and for seasons. This is a picture of what's called an annular solar eclipse. Now, an annular solar eclipse is when the Earth is near its closest point in its orbit to the sun, and the moon is near its farthest point in orbit from the Earth. And what happens is the sizes don't work out quite as cleanly. And so what happens is the moon never totally covers the sun. You get a ring around the sun, and that's called an annular eclipse. And that happened in 2012. And those happen every so often. It's not very common, but they do happen every once in a while. We have an eclipse that's going to happen here in about a total solar eclipse. I think it's April 2024, if I remember right. So we will get a chance in this area to see a total eclipse, like what we're going to see here. This is a total eclipse, and what you see with the white, that's the corona of the sun. And where you see the little red spots there and little loops of red, those are solar flares. And those solar flares, when they explode, are what cause radiation to hit the Earth potentially, except for that we have our magnetosphere. And the magnetosphere ends up allowing, stopping that from getting to us and destroying us. Because you get hit by everything that comes from a solar flare, we wouldn't survive. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 40. There are also celestial bodies and terrestrial bodies, but the glory of the celestial is one and the glory of the terrestrial is another. There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. For one star differs from another in glory. I mean, there's some very bright stars out there. Regal is one of the brightest stars out there. And then you have the stars that you can barely see. But man learned to read the stars, as we will see in a minute. But each thing has its own distinct glory, has its own distinct purpose. The moon and the sun helps us set up our seasons. And the stars, what stars you can see according to what time of the year, because you see different stars at different times of the year because of the 23 degree angle that the Earth's orbit is on, its axis. So we see different stars at different times of the year. This is something that's hard to catch, but it's spectacular when you see it. It's the diamond ring effect. Right when you come out of a total eclipse, for an instant, there's a flash. And it looks like a diamond ring. And this is one of those things that just, it's very hard to see. It's very hard to catch because your timing has to be just right. But that's one of those things that's just extreme, to me, an extreme majesty that we have a unique opportunity with on this earth, that very few other places in the universe would have this type of opportunity to have. This is a picture of all the planets. And I always thought of Mercury as being a red planet when I was a kid, as well as Mars. But you can see Mercury has like a lot of blue and orange to it. Maybe it's a Florida Gators fan, I don't know. But then Venus, and you see all of the planets. I mean, they're two about the same scale. And we see a distinct beauty with each of the planets. Each one has a substantially different look. The two that look closest to alike is Uranus and Neptune. And Uranus has a ring, like Saturn. It's just nowhere near as big as Saturn's ring. This is the constellation. I think there's four or five constellations everyone's real familiar with. Orion is one of them. It's pretty well in the center of the picture there. And it's known because of the three stars that are very close together, almost dead center in the picture. And that's called Orion's Belt. Now, Orion was a hunter where if you look to the right side, you can see it looks like he's got a bow and arrow and he's about to shoot some prey. So that's one of the best known constellations. In this one, this is the constellations the way that you see them generally in September. The Big Dipper is right at the top. The Little Dipper is off to the right. And then you've got other ones you've heard of before, like Sagittarius is down at about 4 o'clock, and Aquarius is around 7 o'clock, and Pisces is about 8 o'clock, Aries is about 9 o'clock. But what happened is, back in the days, even back in the times, ancient times, they knew about constellations. And they used them to guide them in their travels. They knew about the North Star. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 10. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. Notice this. The stars and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. Doesn't that sound like one of the trumpet plagues? And there's one other scripture where constellations are mentioned, and it's mentioned about some of the pagans worshiping the constellations. Milky Way galaxy. This is our galaxy. Now we're getting into a very macro level. It's a spiral galaxy, 100,000 light years across. Now, a light year is just under 6 trillion miles. Light travels at like 186,232 miles per second. So, 6 trillion miles for one light year. And it's saying 100,000 light years? You're looking at 600 quad across. We can't fathom that number. That's a 1 with 23 zeros after it. But we can see that our solar system, if you look in the one view, is near the middle on the left view, kind of in the depth side of it. But if you look on the side where you're looking at a top view, we're out halfway or a little bit more from the black hole that's in the center of the galaxy. And these galaxies rotate. So you have a lot of movement here. You have us rotating around the sun. But the sun is rotating around the galaxy. And the galaxy is rotating around in the universe. So all these things are moving at the same time. And the rate of speed that we are moving right now is in the hundreds of thousands of miles an hour at least. This is a picture of the Milky Way galaxy itself. The darker, the area where it has a lot of light and has a lot of color to it, that is literally the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. If you get into a dark area, I almost put a picture in of Yosemite with it, but it wasn't quite as clear as this one. But you get a place where it's dark, you can see the Milky Way galaxy. Psalm 8. We're going to go through this whole chapter. Psalm 8, and what this is four galaxies that are close together, and they're actually almost like sharing matter, which is why you see little plumes of white moving between them. Psalm 8, verse 1, O Lord, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth, who has set your glory above the heavens. Out of the mouths of babes and nursing infants you have ordained strength because of your enemies, that you may silence the enemy and the avenger. Back to the original picture with the 14 galaxies that are all very close together. Verse 3, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have ordained. What is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? When you see this, when you see some of these pictures that are coming up, including this one, it just is awe-inspiring. And you realize we are a little speck on a small planet in a small solar system in a fair-sized galaxy in a universe that we can't comprehend the size of. So we see just the moon itself and the stars. And it makes you wonder, it makes you think, why did God put us in this position? What is man that you are mindful of him? For you have made him a little lower than the angels, and you have crowned him with glory and honor. So we're not at the level of what the angels are now. They're spirit beings. We're physical beings. Going back to Romans 8, we are in the process through that literal, to go through that literal change to go from a physical being to a spiritual being. But we have been crowned with glory and honor. How is that? By becoming, having that potential of becoming a spirit being. You have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet. All things. See, we had dominion over the earth. We were to dress and keep the earth. We were to make it, keep it beautiful. God made it beautiful. We were to keep it beautiful. But what did we do? We sinned. And as a result of the sin, we live in the type of society we live in today. Yes, it's beautiful in its own way, but think about if no one had sinned, what this world would look like. All sheep and oxen, the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea. We are to take care of this world. We're not to sit there and destroy species because we just want to. We're supposed to take care of things. We're supposed to take care of this earth. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. Over on the right side, this picture has hundreds of galaxies in it. And they took a few and just took a few little spots and pointed them out. There's one where you can see two very easily, the one on the left. The one in the middle, it looks like you can see six, maybe seven, very easily. And the one on the right, you can see two or three. And the one, it's almost got like a turn to it. And the reason for that is they suspect there's a black hole somewhere close to that, and it's causing the light to bend. This is what's called the Sombrero Galaxy. Really a beautiful, very unique galaxy. It looks like it's potentially forming into something that would be comparable to the Milky Way. Let's look at a couple. I've only got a few more slides to go. Isaiah 66. Verse 22, for as the new heavens and the new earth which I make shall remain before me, shall come to pass that from one new moon to another and one Sabbath to another, all flesh shall come to worship me before me, says the Lord. So we think about that. All flesh. That would have to be millennium. That would have to be white throne judgment. That would have to be in the future. This is prophecy. Man's going to have that opportunity to be a child of God. Each and every human being is going to have that opportunity. This is an interesting picture, and I'm going to explain something, because you can see where the sunlight starts hitting all of a sudden. There in Maine and New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, right at the edge of Nova Scotia there, you can see where the sunrise is. And the rest of the region is dark, and got all of the United States and most of Canada except for South Florida and around Brownsville. But other than that, we pretty well got all of the United States in on this picture. And there's, if you go above about the V in heaven and go about a little over halfway above that, where the V is in heaven on the first line and second line, and you see a spot that kind of looks like a little bit like a figure eight-ish type of figure. That's Cincinnati and Dayton. That's where we are. And that gives a perspective of the size of us as compared to the size of this country, let alone how big the country is to the continent, how big the continent is to the planet, and so on. Revelation 21:1, now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth have passed away, and there is no more sea. So this earth isn't going to look like this anymore. It's going to look different, but it's going to be more beautiful, because God is the one that is going to make it, and he will fix it up to where it is the jewel of the universe. And this is a picture of the Andromeda Galaxy. And our galaxy in reality looks similar to that. They're comparable size, they're comparable shape. So this gives an idea of what the Milky Way looks like. We are individual little specks that meet together every week to worship an almighty God that creates everything from micro to macro. From the smallest subatomic particle and particles we probably haven't even discovered yet that are smaller yet, to this universe which we cannot fathom at all. What an awesome God we worship. Let's keep these things in mind, because God is the all-powerful one who has made a beautiful universe, who created a beautiful earth for us to live on, and has given us an opportunity to be recreated as sons and daughters in his kingdom.